This is Peace Talks, a series of programs exploring peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. Today on Peace Talks, we examine keeping the peace in that sometimes fractious world of consumerism.
When they stop serving breakfast.
No, no breakfast.
No breakfast?
No.
All right, I just want a couple of eggs.
No breakfast. Cheeseburger, huh?
Shut up. I don't want a cheeseburger.
Come on, come on, come on. Don't give me that. Come on, let's go. We got to have turnover. We want a cheeseburger? Come on, everybody got a cheeseburger. You want a cheeseburger? Come on, cheeseburger.
I don't want a cheeseburger. It's too early for a cheeseburger.
Too early for a cheeseburger? Look.
I'm Suzanne Kreider. By the time Americans are 12, most of us have begun consuming goods and services. By the time we're adults, most of us have worked in at least one customer service job. As either a consumer or a customer service rep, we've had unpleasant and sometimes very irritating situations that can turn into confrontations. Our guests today on Peace Talks are experts in customer service and consumer advocacy. They're going to help us learn to stay calm and communicate clearly to keep peace in Consumerville. We'll begin with Mary Cooley, a human resources expert on customer service and employee turnover, on how to prevent consumer conflict. Then Joel Cruz Esparza, Assistant Attorney General and Director of the Consumer Protection Division with the New Mexico Attorney General's Office, is going to explain our rights in terms of mediating and litigating consumer complaints. Welcome to each of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, let's start with you. I presume that you do role plays in these customer service trainings. What's one of the trickiest scenarios that you lay out?
We do role playing. The one that comes to mind is what I call one with no options given. Most often that involves, I'll say, utility companies. This is it. This is when the provider or the customer service rep can be at your house, take it or leave it. I think as consumers, we feel cornered, we feel pinned, we feel defensive, and we come out lashing when we feel no options are provided to us.
So what do you tell customer service reps to do when they don't have any options?
Well, I do ask them to search within to really think about any possible options. For instance, I think how we phrase something can make a world of difference. When you use the word do, for instance, it always leads to yes or no. Do you want this? Do you not want this? If you say, what else can I get you? How else can I help you? Walk me through what specifically that person said to you on the phone. If you work to get in that person's head a little bit, you might be surprised at even the tiniest little options that are presented to you. In my mind, it's human being to human being. How do we want to be treated and work in your own job to try to provide that person with the service levels that you yourself would like to receive?
Good. So talk more. We can see now the importance of open-ended questions versus closed questions. What are some of the other basics of giving good customer service?
Well, there's been a lot of studies recently that talked about what we want as customers, and I found this interesting. The two things we want most as customers are, one, give us accurate information. If you are the person at the utility company that should know approximately when that person's going to be at my house, tell me when that person will be at my house. Tell me specifically what they're going to do while they're in my home. Tell me specifically what I can expect from this person while they're there. The second thing is be available. If your office hours are from 10 to 2 and I specifically come down, park my car, and arrive at 10:30 and the door is shut, I'm going to be frustrated as a consumer or a customer if that were to occur.
I really appreciate what you said about accuracy, and I want to tell a story about a miscommunication because the customer service rep thought he was being accurate. And I thought I was understanding him, but I was totally misunderstanding what he said. All right, so here's what happened. I had a pair of high-heeled shoes. And you know how the it rubs off on the back of your heel? So I took the shoes to a shoe store. And I said, and I held the shoe up, and I showed him where it had rubbed off. And I said, I would like this heel replaced. And he said, okay, we'll replace both of those heels, and that'll cost $15. And I thought it was really a great deal because they were like navy blue leather shoes. Mm-hmm. So I thought he was going to replace the leather. So I came back a week later and I said, I'm here to pick up my shoes. And he got the shoes and showed them to me and the leather was still ripped. Oh, and I said, no, I asked you to, you know, to replace the heel.
Right.
And he pointed to the little plastic tips on the bottom of the shoe heel and said, that's what I replaced for $15. I totally went nuts. I was screaming at the top of my voice at people. And actually, the last thing I remember is somebody behind me in line said, I think we should call the police.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I just totally lost it. So he was being accurate,
right.
But I was completely misunderstanding.
Right.
So what does a customer service rep do when they encounter somebody like me who's just lost it?
Well, I think the worst thing people do is embattle that customer, is, lady, that's not what you said, or I fixed the heel, what more do you want? And I think we've all been in those situations. I really do like the acronym that we use in training, which is HEAT. First, when a customer is irate, hear them out. Don't engage. Don't have nonverbals with your arms crossed in front of you that say, I'm tuned out, I'm not listening. So just hear them out. Let that person voice however they have to voice their concerns. The next one is just empathize with them. If that were happening to me, how would I feel? Try to live for a moment in their shoes. Third, and I don't think this happens nearly enough today, is say, we're sorry. I'm sorry, we're sorry. I'm sorry this occurred to you. Again, be sincere about the situation. And T, the last one is, okay, so what? Where do we go from here? Take responsibility for what occurred. I can tell by what transpired here that you're clearly not happy with the shoes. It's important that I get this right. Here's what I am able to do. Here's what I'm willing to do. Take responsibility, ownership for it.
Okay.
Get it fixed.
Those are great tips for customer service reps. And I want to talk, too, about the consumer's responsibility. And so often when something goes wrong, customers don't speak up. So they're sort of, we're kind of like on these opposite ends. Like we either scream or we walk out mad, but we don't tell anybody about it.
Right.
So talk about the difference between a walker and a talker.
Well, there are really two types of consumers. Walkers leave an organization, leave a restaurant, leave a car dealership, wherever, leave a utility, and don't tell the customer service rep they're upset, but they tend to tell everybody else. Oh, don't go to that restaurant. You won't believe what they did to me. And so the restaurant doesn't have the information to turn their behavior or the problem around. They're not empowered to make change occur necessarily. A talker is, even though it's more difficult, it's the better type of consumer because they're willing to share with you, as difficult as it may be to hear, look, this isn't right, and I'm hoping that you'll make it right. Now, I think what we need to know as consumers is, as well as customer service reps, it isn't typically the issue that upsets us. It's how the customer service rep or the organization responds to us once we've brought the issue to their attention. Classic example, I was in a restaurant once having breakfast with my brother, and I don't like eggs very much. I only like eggs a particular way. And I specifically asked for eggs sunny side up, slightly runny, because I have for 30 years. That's how I always like my eggs. And she brought me scrambled eggs. And when I said, ma'am, I specifically asked for sunny side up, she said, that's how they come. If you don't like it, too bad, and walked away. I was really taken aback by that. That was not the response I expected. I felt like I couldn't talk to her any longer. And when I brought it to the manager's attention, he was more receptive. He said, she didn't speak to you properly. We will get you something else to eat right away. We're very sorry that this occurred. Please give us a second chance.
Yeah. So it's not that people make mistakes, because we're always going to make mistakes.
Sure.
It's just how people respond.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's really tricky, I think, as a customer in that kind of situation, not to feel self-righteous.
Right.
I have another shoe story. So I bought some running shoes recently, and as I was trying on the shoes, I asked the clerk if I could try on some inserts. He brought me a pair of inserts that cost $30. I tried them on. I didn't like them. And I said, excuse me, do you have any cheaper inserts? And he said, no, all we have are $40 orthotics. And I thought that was weird, that there was only, you know, one kind of insert. So I started walking around the store, and sure enough, I found three other brands of inserts that were less than $30. I tried all of them on, and I picked a pair that was $20. And
right.
I was really happy that I didn't get very mad about it, but I did want to call him on it. So I walked up to him and said, excuse me, I'm going to buy these shoes, and I just want you to know that I don't feel good about you lying to me. There were cheaper inserts.
Sure.
So what are your recommendations to folks to stay calm when they do end up being in the right? and not taking it out on somebody else.
That can be tricky, and you're right. I think we do revert oftentimes to the self-righteousness feeling. I think we need to know that, unfortunately, employers today are not investing much time or energy or other resources in training their staff. And we do make this assumption that we will be treated a certain way, and we aren't always. As somebody who teaches customer service training, I'm very sensitive to customer service skills when I'm out and about in the community. An example I'll give you is at an auto dealer, I was told my car was ready. And so I made plans. You know how it is when your car's in the dealer or the shop, you've got to get a ride, you've got to get down there. So I did all that. I arrived only to find out that no, in fact, was my car wasn't even ready. It hadn't even been touched. And it was going to be another day or more before my car would be picked up. And I was upset, but at the same time, I felt a need to say something to the woman who'd called me to say, let me tell you what I went through to get here and how important it is that you convey accurate information to people like me so that we don't make plans, get dropped off, and be stuck here. And what I did was I walked away for about 30 seconds, took a big deep breath, and walked back and said, could I speak to you for a minute in private? And she was good enough to get off her headset and walk over and let me do that. Not everyone is going to be that willing, but I think you play a big role in how you approach that person. If you're in a huff and in a defensive posture, that's only going to put them in a further defensive posture, and I think that's a lose-lose situation.
Okay, good. So I heard a couple important things. One was big, deep breath.
Right.
And also to take the person maybe outside of the setting
exactly.
where they were working, and then also to educate them rather than kind of ream them out.
Right.
Right.
So and again, with the language, I try to use I's. I need you to know. I felt. I was rather than you. You called, even though she did. When we hear you, I think it automatically makes us more defensive. You dropped the ball. You made the call. You're the reason I'm standing in front of you. That all may be true, but we're going to get one response when we choose language that way versus, I think, a different response when we own it.
This is Peace Talks. I'm Suzanne Kreider. We're talking with Mary Cooley, a human resources expert on customer service and employee turnover. And later we'll be talking with Joel Cruz Esparza, Assistant Attorney General and Director of the Consumer Protection Division with the New Mexico Attorney General's Office, about preventing or at least resolving consumer conflicts. Let's take some questions and comments from our studio audience.
Hi, my name is Don. There's a question, and the question is the issue of assumptions, you know, the assumption that somebody didn't serve you well because they didn't like you, or it was personal, mm-hmm. or they were stupid, we make assumptions about them, and they make assumptions about us. So what's an alternative? What do we do when we start to label people? Because that's what gets our anger coming up, you know?
Right.
What do you suggest we do?
Right. Well, from an employer standpoint, I think having vehicles for your employees to utilize, sounding boards, reinforce the training, recognize good efforts, that doesn't occur enough in my mind in this society. As consumers, and in particular consumers in this society, I think we do label far too often and far too readily. What, within 30 seconds we size somebody up? More often inaccurately than accurately. So I think we could all stand to take one big step back and understand again we're all human beings and we owe it to each other to treat each other the way we want to be treated.
Mary Cooley, if you had 1 minute to summarize how to be an effective customer service rep, what are those two or three main suggestions?
Be sincere in the messages you send. Be specific to people. Address your customer's personal needs to feel like a valued human being and address their practical need. Why did they come to you? Is it for a taco? Is it for a book? Is it for a report? If you address those elements, you will deliver good customer service.
And how about any recommendations on books or websites, resources that can help people as consumers or customer service reps?
Well, this is one of my most favorite books ever. It's called Turned On by Roger Dow. Roger was a longtime vice president for Marriott Corporation, and It's stories and just quaint little reflections on his role as a leader in the customer service world. The other book that I think is a really strong book for anyone is The Customer Comes Second. And that's really about putting your employees first. If you do that, they in turn will put your customers first.
We're going to list those as well as have some other materials, links, and excerpts from our program on our website, which is peacetalksradio.com. All right. Thanks very much to Mary Cooley. I'd like to switch our focus now from preventing consumer conflict to actually resolving more difficult consumer conflicts. And we have Joel Cruz Esparza, who is the director of the Office of Consumer Protection here for the New Mexico Attorney General's Office. Joel, what are some of the main services that your office provides to New Mexicans?
I'm going to say that there's four major types of task or work that we do in our office. The main one is mediation. That is that by the time a consumer has gone to the business and engaged in a transaction of sorts and then attempted to resolve it with them, and there's no way to resolve it, then the consumer comes to our office. So most of the time, by the time the consumer comes with us, they already are in a dispute. And obviously, we don't have necessarily a monetary amount of dispute that we say above this amount we take care of. We take care of anybody that comes to our office and says, I have this dispute. It could be on a matter of principle. It could be on a matter of money, obviously. But the more money people lose in a transaction or they feel that they have lost, of course, they will for sure come to our office and want us to mediate it. We also attempt to do sort of legal education for people so that we can prevent this kind of dispute. So we never see these kinds of cases in our office. Of course, that's impossible, but nevertheless, I think that it's efficient in terms of us trying to prevent the many complaints that we get in a year. We get thousands of complaints in our office because we are attending the public in the entire state of New Mexico. The other two things that we do in our office is to do sort of also preventive work, which is to work with the legislature and try to pass laws that are more fair to both parties, that are more understandable, that are good laws that they can resolve their disputes without having to go to court or come to our office for resolution. And then the fourth kind of activity that we do is exactly now it's an intervention that is no longer mediation, is no longer friendly, it's adversary, and that is filing a lawsuit in the district court or in the federal court to try to stop the behavior of a particular business that we allege or have determined that there's a business practice that is really violating the laws of New Mexico.
Tell us a story about a consumer conflict that was successfully mediated.
Sure.
To prevent litigation.
One of our biggest complaints that we get in our office is auto sales. And so this particular incident occurred of a consumer buying an automobile, paying $10,000 for this automobile, and within 5-6 days of purchasing the vehicle, the vehicle began to fail. Then he went back to the dealer and attempted to tell the dealer, look, I just bought this. I paid $10,000. I have a loan right now to pay $10,000. I don't think that I should now keep a vehicle that is not worth it. I would like for you to fix it. The response of the dealer was, well, I sold it to you as is. That is your car, and therefore it's your problem. I have nothing to do with that.
So the Lemon Law doesn't apply.
This incident that I'm talking about occurred just before this year. We now have a used lemon law in the books. So this is an example going to the two things that I'm saying, trying to mediate and then trying to pass a law that would help and prevent this kind of situations. This happened in 2003. And at that time, there was no such thing as a lemon law for used cars. The lemon law only applied for new cars.
Okay.
For used cars, New Mexico had a law that said that a dealer, a seller of automobiles, could sell an automobile as is with two conditions. One is that it's very clear in the contract that it was being sold as is. And second of all, that it was negotiated between the seller and the buyer that the car was indeed going to be sold as is.
So tell us what happened in the mediation.
So in this case, it wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy case because we had to really dig very deeply in analyzing the facts of the case, how the transaction took place, whether or not there was truly an as-is in this particular case or not. And then finally, before we told the parties, look, we recommend that this is what is done. You take your car back. It's going to only cost you $700 to fix it. You can resell it. It could be yours. In the meantime, you have a customer here that you may lose. Might as well, you know, he doesn't want to deal with you anymore. Return his money. Get his car back. He'll lose a little bit of money, and everybody can be satisfied to that extent.
So I'm curious, when you all are doing mediation, are the consumers involved in that, or you all just take over and do
that? No, the consumers involved at every single step.
Okay.
Oh, yes. And sometimes our recommendations do not satisfy the consumer, too.
Right. Let's talk about the second service that you all offer through the Office of Consumer Protection, which is education. And it really is a consumer's responsibility to be educated about choices. But wow, I'm thinking about the time and energy it takes to research all our options. Like, let's say somebody wants to get wireless phone service or some kind of life insurance. To really thoroughly read a contract or a warranty takes a lot of time. How can we possibly be as educated as we need to be as consumers?
That's a great question, and it's a really a question that hits at the heart of the relationship between the seller or the businessman and the consumer, because it is pretty clear that you and I will probably have in our lives maybe four or five big transactions in our lives, and that is buying a house or buying a car. Maybe some of us will have more and as a personal use. While the other side, the mortgage lender, that's part of their business. That's what they do. They're going to be doing thousands of these transactions by the time they get to you. So clearly, the balance of things is not equal. The seller or the mortgage broker or the lender has the tremendous advantage of knowing how the industry works in and out, because that's exactly what his profession is about. And you bring a very naive and innocent consumer who really does not know how the process works well. So you have a disadvantage. There's nothing that we can do to educate this consumer unless you make him the same training that this lender has to make him equal. So that's the reason why then you have the government entity coming in through the legislature and equaling the field. And it is they who have the responsibility to pass the laws ahead of the transaction of the parties to say, this is what the rules of the game are, so that you, the seller, do not take advantage of this consumer who will never be to your level.
But it is frustrating because Mary talked about customer service reps being accurate. And I know when my husband and I built a house, we'd never done that before. And so I was constantly asking the mortgage folks, what am I forgetting or what else do I need to put on the list? And they would forget to tell me something like, well, you need approval for your septic system. So then we show up the day before closing and we don't have that. Whose fault is that? I mean, I asked, but I didn't know exactly what to ask.
Yeah, I think at that point, this happens in many different arenas. It is very difficult, and it's unfair to blame you, the consumer, who does not know how the process works. And I think in that particular situation, like in many other situations, it's the responsibility of the business person who is involved in that to be able to tell the customer what they need to do in order to make the transaction go smoothly.
Joel Cruz Esparza, Assistant Attorney General and Director of Consumer Protection Division for the State of New Mexico Attorney General Office. What does consumer protection have to do with peace?
Good question. And you know, believe it or not, we get consistent attacks from different industries claiming that we are anti-business or that we are controversial or that we are adversary. But really thinking about our work and seeing the injustice and how the manipulations of some of the industries are, to be talking here in a very peaceful and very civilized way, we are in essence peace workers. We're trying to resolve the matter in a fair way. that before we get all of our emotions and we begin to really put the kind of pressure that would be something else, a violent sort of stance in terms of the anger that people may have, this is really, we're trying to be peaceful about it. It has the appearance that we are one-sided. It has the appearance of protection. It has the appearance of adversary. But at the same time, if you notice, because of the same because this unequal relationship we talk about, we're trying to equalize things so that we can maintain peace. Because if we don't do this, really, people are going to get very mad.
What are the key points that you want consumers to remember from our program?
I guess this is the situation where we heard about the two kinds of consumers, a walker or a talker. I would necessarily say that I agree that we should talk. We should address the business with our concerns first. In fact, we have a complaint form that we tell people, go to the business first and try to talk to them before you come to us. We don't want to engage in mediating until you've made some efforts to try to resolve this. We want to tell people that, however, that if that doesn't happen, to come to us, to file a complaint with us, and see if we can try to resolve this. This is the only way. We're not looking for trouble here. We're looking to, as a sample, to see how the transactions in New Mexico are taking place, how the trade is happening, how commerce is being done. And hopefully, by the complaint filed with our office, we are able to see if we can mediate this and determine the kind of practices that are going on in New Mexico. And if they're unfair, we have the authority by the legislature to try to stop them. So I like to encourage people to call our number. We have an 800 number throughout the state of New Mexico. It's 1-800-678-1508.
Great. And Joel, could you recommend any websites, books, or other resources?
Yes. First of all, we're just about to create a much better website than the one we have. But we do have our website that we have several links. So I like to encourage people to also go into our website. Our website is www.ago.state.nm.us.
Great. We'll list that as well as other materials, links, and excerpts from this program on our website, which is peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio, written as one word, .com. Also at the site, you can send us your comments, sign up to be in our studio audience, or find information about ordering CD copies of our programs. That's all at peacetalksradio.com. Peace Talks is a production of Good Radio Shows Incorporated and was recorded in the studios of KUNM in Albuquerque. Producer and engineer is Paul Ingalls. Music by Ali Adelman. I'm Suzanne Kreider. Thanks for listening.
Governor, what do you want? What are you going to have?
I'll have a cheeseburger.
No cheeseburger, no hamburger. How about a couple of eggs, please? Eggs? All right. Scramble.
All right, scramble.
All right. What do you drink?
Coke. No Coke, Pepsi.
All right, Pepsi!